Testing. Testing, testing, testing. This is D.W. Calvert speaking. I'm in the home of Mr. John Airey in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is the first day of February, 1979. Mr. Airey was a long time extension dairyman in this state. He's 93 years old, and he knows probably as much about the early history of the School of Agriculture and of the dairy industry in North Carolina as any person. Mr. Airey, it's real nice to visit with you this morning, and I wonder if you would mind giving us a little bit of a background as to where you were born and how you grew up and something of that sort.
I'd be glad to. And I was born in Ardle County near Ellumwood, which is just a railroad station and a lumber shipping point back in those days. In fact, the matter is that it handled more business then than it's handling now, because the lumber business is about a thing of the past. Now, I was raised on a farm on what you would call a subsistence farm. It was red land, not a good cotton farm, no count for the tobacco, and we had plenty of food, a whole community around there. It was just a subsistence section. The average family would help kill 6 to 8 hogs for home use, and so on that way. We had even small flocks of sheep on most farm, and in our community was two old ladies who wove that wool into blankets. We made our own blankets. And my schooling was started with free school. The building was first located right close to my home, but later on was moved down east part of the county of about a mile and a quarter from home. And we had to walk that far every morning to go to school, but we had the railroad to go over. That was a big help in the winter time, because our roads were muddy. And in 1907, I injured my left hip in a fall, and I did that early in the spring, and during that summer, I would limp on that leg, and for no reason, I don't know, because I went to school in the summertime, and one of my teachers made me hop on that leg because she said it was just a habit that limping was. But that fall, it developed into real trouble. A hip bill and was lanced, and that put me on crutches, and I walked on crutches until I was about 15. I got rid of the crutches, I could tell though that my left leg was not growing like the right one, and especially from my hip to my knee. And I began to have that shoe, the bottom of that shoe built up to make the two legs straight, about the same length. And that bothered me some about going to school. My mile that I had to walk on crutches in the wintertime sometimes kept me from getting to school. And finally went to China Grove High School and took third and fourth grade worked there. And
was China Grove a boarding school at that time?
Yeah, it was a boarding school.
But you didn't board there? Did you?
Yes, I did.
You did?
Yes. It was a boarding school and had quite a large number of people from other counties going there and staying there. We gave here, I think this would be one thing that's interesting. We gave the one boy, he was from Western Salem, his board to buy the food. And we hired two ladies who managed the mess hall. And I remember very distinctly that one month I paid $4.75 for my board.
$4.75 for a month. Well, things have changed for sure.
That's been a big change.
That's about what I paid for a cheap dinner last night.
Yes, sir.
Well, now you went to the, did you graduate from China Grove School?
No, I didn't graduate. I went there for a full year, and then I went to Lenoir College at Hickory. Another year.
Lenoir, it's lower now called Lenoir Ryan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And from there, I came to A&M College.
A&M College.
Took examination to enter.
And what year would that have been?
That was 1905.
And they admitted you to A&M, and you didn't have a high school diploma, did you?
No. That's the reason I had to take an examination.
And they admitted you on examination.
And I got along. The trouble with me, I was like a lot of them here then. I didn't have any money, and I had to work to stay here. And I got 7.5 cents an hour. That was a standard wage.
What kind of work did you do?
On farm.
On the dairy farm, I bet.
Well, yes.
General farm.
Sawing wood. We had one year boy here from Guilford College who bought a little gasoline wood sawing outfit, and I would work for him, but he'd pay me 7.5 cents an hour.
And you, so you came in at to NC State, and how long did you go to school at A&M?
It was A&M at that time, Agriculture and Mechanics.
And how many years did you spend there?
I graduated in 4 years. Then I come back in 1910, took some special area work, and got my master's degree.
Got your master's degree in 1910?
Yeah. And I got my bachelor's degree in 4 years.
Mm-hmm. And then what did you do after you got your master's degree?
Well, I don't know, it just seemed like one thing after another turned up. We had at that time, the Department of Agriculture did some extension work. And they had a man here from Kansas that did dairy extension work.
What was his name?
J.A. Conover.
J.A. Conover.
That's right.
From Kansas.
From Kansas. Mm-hmm. And he was building a silo out here at Mr. Worth's place.
Worth?
Worth. Dave Worth's father.
Dave Worth's father. W-O-R-T-H. Yeah. Yeah.
And I went out there to look at it. And then I talked to Conover. and he seemed to have some interest in me. And he said, I'll just give you a job this summer if you want it. I've had a good many inquiries about silos, and that's one of the main things he was doing, is trying to, with the dairymen, and we didn't have any dairymen in the state then except producer-distributors, and that was a man produces milk, he bottled it, and he delivered it.
Mm-hmm.
Called him producer-distributor. And it was with that class, largely, that he was trying to get to improve their feed conditions, build silos and put up some silage so they'd have some feed in the spring and not have hollow horn hogtail. Most of those fellows had hollow horn hogtail in the spring.
Treated by
I told them it was hollow tail. I mean hollow belly.
Yeah.
It hollow belly was the trouble.
Some of them treated it by splitting it and putting turpentine in.
Splitting the tail and boring holes in the horns.
So you told him it was hollow belly.
It was hollow belly. I got in, one thing I think maybe I shouldn't say. I was at a butter, milk, and butter making man. We had a lot of those fellows. They have 10, 12 cows, and they would make butter. And on the weekends, they'd go to town, deliver their butter and their buttermilk. And that is Dave Ware's father. No, I'm getting mixed up just a little wee bit there. It was in this county, but not Dave Ware's father. And we were in the front room, I was with the county agent, before Big Fire, is in late winter, and the county agent was just happened to get close to the farmer, and he was talking to him, and I was always sitting around the fire, and I was talking to his wife, and she finally raised the subject. She says to me, you people up at the college don't believe in hollow horn doll tail, do you? And I didn't like to discuss that subject then, because there was just so many people that believed in it. And I said, no, we don't think much of that. And, well, she says, I believe in it, because in the spring the cows will get down. They don't give any milk much, and they seem like they got no life. They don't get up in the morning and get out and hunt some feed. And I said, well, I don't think it's anything but hollow belly. And that tickled the farmer and the county agent very much and embarrassed me.
You don't remember the name of the county agent, do you?
County agent was, name slipped me.
Well, that's all right.
I'll tell you, his son was a dentist here for a long time, and I'm sure was here when you were here.
Well, that doesn't matter about that.
I don't remember his name.
Yeah. Well, but then you...
That just gives you a little idea of the conditions we had. We didn't... There was not very much commercial dairying in North Carolina at that time, and that was back in 1906 and 7, along about that time. The people that produce bottle milk, as a rule, was located pretty close to the towns that they served. They ought to be right close to the, so that the delivery, cut down the delivery.
Now you took this temporary job working with silos. When did that get converted into a full-time job?
Yes. I worked that summer, and then came back to A&M and took a special course in dairying and got my master's degree in the spring of 10.
Spring of 1910?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I went direct from here to Washington. There's one thing I never did. I never made an application for a job, and I never made an application for a raise in salary. I always figured if my work was worth anything, they'd give it to me. If it wasn't worth anything, they wouldn't give it to me.
How'd you happen to go to Washington?
John Michaels was in charge of the dairy department here at the college at the time.
John Michaels?
And I, Michaels.
Uh-huh.
And I milked in the barn for $1.25 a month per cow. And I always tried to keep enough cows to pay my board, which was about $8 a month back in those days. And he took a liking to me, and Chief Wall from Department of Agriculture at Washington, he was a Clemson man. And he put McLean, I believe it was J.H. McLean, was one of his field men working out of Washington, and he told him to look for a local man down Stark, North Carolina. And he, Michaels recommended me to him. And I never knew didn't know anything about it. Michael told me about it.
Uh-huh.
And it's just my work with Michael that caused him to do that.
Well, then did you actually go to work in Washington for a while, or?
I went up there in the summer service. They had temporary appointments, and they told me, he said, you come up here and work 6 months and take an examination and we'll give you a job. And my work then up there was to interest dairymen in cow testing work with the people that sold milk in Washington, D.C.
That was at the very...
That was largely Virginia and Maryland.
That was at the very beginning of cow testing work, wasn't
it?
Yeah,
very beginning of cow testing work. Uh-huh. And I went up there and spent all the summer, and along in the fall, my father's health gave away, and he wrote me and wanted me to come home and take over the farm. Well, I didn't know just hardly what to do.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had sisters, no brothers.
No brothers.
And I finally went home, though, and father and myself and the family got together, and he put a price on the farm, and I said, well, now, I'll pay this to my sisters, but I want credit for it. And we had a legal contract written, and I paid them off just as I could, working, and wait a minute. I went home and had this contract written, and they offered me some work in San Francisco, right up there. And I told them, I said, I don't want to do that. I've got to go home.
That is, the people in Washington offered to send you to San Francisco?
Yeah. And I went home and and stayed there, in about a year, and he offered me a county agent's job. And I told him, I said, I got a job. And they said, well, you can stay at home, make that your headquarters. And I worked in Arnold County as county agent in 13 and 14 up until September in 14. And I got $90 a month and I furnished my own transportation and any local expenses that I had, because I went home and in as many nights as I could.
But what kind of transportation did you have then?
Horse and buggy.
Horse and buggy.
Before the days of the car.
Car, and you did your county agent work in a horse and buggy?
Yeah, well, the first, most of it, the latter part of it, I got a car.
You remember when you got your first?
Very few cars at that time.
You remember when you got your first car? What year? What year did you get your first car? Do you remember?
That was 14, I believe. 12 or 14.
14. About the time I was born. I was born in 1913.
See,
so far.
And, that's the way I got started.
And then how long were you county agent?
When I was county agent, I went up there and surveyed the conditions, and I found that there was a lot of farm butter being made, sold to the country stores at 20 cents a pound, and pork, there was a good many surplus hogs there in the fall when the people began to kill hogs. And I wanted to do something that would increase or improve the market that they had, because the market was flooded with pork for just a while, flooded with farm butter that was sent to Richmond and processed and then put back on the market as processed butter. And the farm didn't get anything out of it, about 20, 15, 20 cents a pound when he sold it to the grocery store. And there was a cooperative creamery at Hickory at that time. And so I decided the best thing for me to do was get out here and organize some cream routes and ship that cream to Hickory until we were shipping out enough fat to make the operation of a local creamery possible. And that's what we did. And we organized cream routes in the northern part of the county, all over the county. But the northern Mooresville, it was shipped largely from Mooresville and Statesville to Hickory. And whenever we were shipping out enough pounds that they told us was necessary to make an operation successful, why, we built our own plant.
Well, now, how was that cream hauled? Was it hauled?
A Mooresville Cooperative Creamery. We located the creamery at the point that the largest quantity of fat was being shipped out.
And it was shipped out on trains, I guess.
Shipped to Hickory.
On train, or?
Train, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, all together on train.
And it'd be brought into Mooresville on wagons and?
Wagons,
buggies,
and so forth.
Uh-huh.
And we had a very good creamer down there for a long time until the demand for whole milk got greater, and that brought in condensery. And we had a condenser located at Statesville.
That was the Carnation, wasn't
Carnation.
It?
Carnation people come in.
Yeah, that was a good bit later.
A little later, yeah.
Now, was that there while you were county agent?
Yep.
It was?
Yes, sir.
And when did you...
These cream routes, what brought those things in.
Yeah.
The routes was already organized. Of course, there were small herds. We had to start just right at the ground. And 5, 6, maybe 10 cows came to places. And, but it started off pretty well. The volume was pretty well, and it stayed there good. And later on, though, that is in recent times, the demand for bottled milk has grown so fast up in that area that a lot of those condenser people, condenser market was better than the cream market. And a lot of the those people went developed larger herds, and when the demand for bottled milk, local demand, grew, why, they switch over to that because a little more money in it. They went from cream to condenser to bottled milk.
Yeah. Now the condensery made the
We didn't have any failures anywhere.
The condensery made what we call the evaporated milk,
yeah.
canned milk, and shipped it out all over the country, I guess.
That's it.
Well, now you stayed, how many years, when did you quit being county agent in Iredell County?
Well, I organized those cream routes. The people down here at A&M got interested in the project.
Uh-huh.
And they wanted me to come with the college. And that's where I got to college.
That's why you got down here, because you had started that kind of work in the county.
A little more money, that's all.
Oh. Now, when you came down here, what year did you come down in? Do you remember?
I came down here in September 1914.
1914. And you were the only dairy extension man here, were you?
No. A.J. Reed from Kentucky was a dairy extension man. I come under Reed.
You came under Reed?
Yes, sir.
And
at that time, Reed, well, I wouldn't want this in there. He was a, well, cut that thing off. He was a...
Now, Mr. Reed was the man you came here under.
Under, that's right.
And then what
and
did he do?
It was the work that I ended up in Arnold County that broke that.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, is it true that Pine State Creamery actually got started in the basement of Patterson Hall?
Well, yes. That was during World War I.
Now, Mr. Reed
was... The Army was located, the camp was located out here in the old fairground. Right on Hillsborough Street.
Yeah, right along
and
Clark
they
Street.
Wanted pasteurized milk.
Uh-huh.
And there wasn't a pasteurizer in Well, at that time there was just a little plant in Wilmington and a little plant at Asheville.
Uh-huh.
Just small, very small. But no available milk. No available pasteurized milk, and so we pasteurized that until Pine State was built.
That is, you pasteurized it in the basement of Patterson Hall?
Patterson Hall.
Until Mr. Reed started Pine State, is that right?
That's right.
And did he leave the extension service? And
yes, Reed, let's see. I was trying to think of what come of Reed.
But he left the college to go to Pine State.
He left the college, and then I took his place.
You took his place.
Yeah.
So you were then in charge of the dairy extension work.
Dairy extension work. I took charge of the work in Fort, let me see. I'm just not right clear what year it was.
Well, it doesn't make too much difference.
In the teens, though.
Somewhere in the teens,
yeah.
About the time of World War I.
Yeah. And then I was in charge of the work until 53.
And you were in charge of it till 53 when you retired. Well, now, let's go back. When you first took charge of the dairy extension work, Tell us a little bit about how you developed the statewide program. I know, for example, that you brought in some other people. I know that there's a story about the cheese factories up in the mountains. Tell us some about when Kimry and Farnham and Clevenger and all these people came into the picture.
Well, we had no pasteurizing plants except a small one at Wilmington and a small one at Asheville.
That's Wilmington and Asheville.
Wilmington.
And Asheville.
Asheville.
Right, right.
And of course, I had to start with those, that is, from a manufacturing standpoint. And I know that a little one at Asheville was owned by a lawyer, and he got a hold of Hans Broby, who was a full-blooded Dane born and raised in Denmark.
Hans Broby.
Yeah, Hans Broby.
B-R-O-B-I-E.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who was a very outstanding man. He was a young man, energetic, with a lot of ability. And at that time, Biltmore had the milk trade of Asheville. And that was his competition, and he realized what it was. And he wanted me to come up and help him to organize some milk routes, and I did. And he put in Guernseys, chalk Guernseys, because Biltmore had Jerseys, and the people were acquainted with a high test milk. And he said to for me to compete with him, I got to put in a high test milk. And so he had this lawyer to put in a small plant between Asheville and Hendon. No, Asheville, Waynesville, mm-hmm. Asheville-Waynesville, and put it right up on the side of the hill so everybody could see it. And
was that the plant that ultimately became Southern Dairies?
Yeah. And he developed that business until it was large enough to interest Southern Dairies. And my understanding is that he had no interest in it. It was sold to Southern Dairy for $1 million. That's what I heard. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not.
Which was a lot of money back then.
And a lot of money.
Yeah.
But he had a pretty big business.
Yeah.
He built that business up there like everything. And he was a fellow who would just work with you. I put on some milk-consuming campaigns. They had an office in Washington. And I got help from them, and when I wanted anything, these campaigns were put on through the schools. They wrote essay contests and made poster contests, and we gave premiums for it, and I got help from the home agents, and we made talks in the schools on milk as a food. And when I wanted anything with Hans Broby, just tell him and it would be there in just a short time. We put a cow exhibit on right on the square in Asheville, under a tent. Yeah.
Well, now in the meantime, other parts of the state had certain developments.
Well, yes, we put those milk campaigns on all over the state.
All over the
schools.
And
went to Wilmington. We had it here. We had it in Charlotte.
When did you start adding some other people to help you?
Well, when I come in there, I saw right away we had one of our big jobs, feed. We were short of feed. And I wanted somebody to work with the county agents on silos and things of that kind, so we'd have winter feed. And I got Kimry out of during World War I. I know he come down here with the flu and went back and gave it to his family to see about his job. Mm-hmm. And that's when we had real flu would kill you then.
Very, very just bad epidemic.
Hundreds of
them. Yeah.
And they put on Kimry, Farnham, gave Kimry the western part of the state and Farnham the eastern part of the state.
The other way around.
Kimry the eastern part of the state and Farnham the western part of the state because there was cheese possibility up there. Uh-huh. And they're making some farm cheese in, but didn't have much of a market for it. And
is it true that the first carload of cheese ever shipped out of the South was made up over there in Tennessee and North Carolina?
It was shipped from Tennessee. I mean, it's hauled up there.
Over to Bristol.
First carload. I think I've got a picture of that.
I know Mr. Curtis said something about that in his history.
First carload of cheese was.
Well, Farnham worked a lot on that, didn't he?
Well, Farnham come in here as a cheese specialist. He's a Pennsylvania fellow and had taken work at the University of Pennsylvania.
Penn State
was a cheese specialist.
Was it at Penn State?
Penn State, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then the cheese business during the war grew fast because well, they got to paying up as much as 20, 25 cents a gallon for milk.
Mm-hmm.
And those beef cattle that they had milked pretty heavy in the summertime. Mm-hmm. And that's where it started. It started with shorthorn cattle.
Yeah.
And
that's up in the area where I grew up in Ashe County and through that area.
It's started that way and it grew pretty fast. And I had several men from Washington, their whole expense was paid by the Washington office, just cheesemakers, mm-hmm. come up and work, learn those fellows
how to make
cheese, cheddar cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And
now,
then that took care of the cheese proposition. Kimry took care of the family cow proposition in the East. That's about all. And both of them were production men, feed production. And we had a pretty sizable business going then.
Well, when did you, what caused you to bring Mr. Clevenger into the picture? What caused you to bring Mr. Clevenger?
Oh, Clevenger, well, we had trouble getting good creamer manager. We just hadn't been trained. And I got Clevenger, they told me had Clevenger working in Tennessee, and he could divide his time between Tennessee and North Carolina. And I got him first, just about half of his time.
Was he a federal man?
Yeah, he's a federal man,
mm-hmm.
fully.
Mm-hmm.
And he come over here, and he was a very practical man. He could go in and set up a plant, put the refrigerating part in, and of course they like that, and then he'd check the books for them. Carr Scott, our former Governor Scott, who was a big producer at one of the cooperative plants, said as long as Clevenger checks our books, well, we won't fail, we know that, because he's not going to pay us enough for milk on the farm.
So he was, he came in primarily assigned to the job of developing managers for the creameries.
Creameries. His work was creamery altogether.
So that you had a cheese man mostly in the mountain area.
Mountains. Family cow in the east.
And the family cow man in the east, and you had a creamery man wherever there were creameries.
Yeah.
Mostly in the Piedmont, I guess.
That's in Piedmont, that's
yeah.
right.
So that was the
or
way.
Wherever there was we had a right good development of plants along about that time, in the early 20s.
Yeah.
The plant was established at Durham, and the creamery here was in, I'm not right, I can't think of the date that Pine State over, but it was in the teens.
Uh-huh.
And,
So pretty soon you had specialists in who were specialists in two senses. One, that they dealt primarily with a product or a specific job like cheese or family cow or creameries, but you also had them first located in specific areas, but
that's
then that
right.
began to spread.
And
Now you went along with that staff for a long time, didn't you?
Yes. I had that staff on one annual report. I give the total number of years of extension workers that year, I mean up until that year.
That the four of you
on each man here. Yeah, I'd worked so many years, and farm worked so many years, and so on and so on. And about
100 and some years.
144 years, I believe it was.
I can remember that report. Well, Mr. Area, this is really the kind of information that nobody but you could provide. And let's move on into the later developments. You went through the World War I period there, and you had Farnham and Kimry and Clevenger were added, and then we moved on up toward the World War II period, and things got very active.
Yes. I'm just thinking. I didn't bring in anybody during the World War II because I...
You still had the same staff?
Same group.
Same group.
And we had a very close group, and I don't say it boastingly at all, but a group that when one fella couldn't go, another one would go.
You had a lot of your meetings at night, too, didn't you?
Meetings at night. We had night meetings. We didn't count hours, day meetings, or anything that would help. And then I had contests with the kids, keeping records on their cows. Anything that I could get that would build a little more cow knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Did you travel on the trains a lot?
Trains nearly all together. Mm-hmm. And then in the county, travel with the county agent.
When you got to the county on a train, the county agent would meet you in a buggy or?
Yeah, or a car a little later on.
Later on a car.
Then we did a lot of work with the State Dairy Association, State Journey, State Holstein Association. And we in that work, we had formed a contact with some of our leaders, take the Chathams, and Chatham was a herd at Elkin.
Klondike Farm.
Yeah, and then this, and Hills at Durham.
Quail Roost Farm.
Quail Roost. And then that was the thing right there, and I think it was one of the best things I ever did. We organized the North Carolina Milk Producers Association, and set that up. Fitzpatrick was made chairman of it, and Fitz was one of the strongest dairymen that I've ever worked with. He was a very able man, and he had the very best of training. He worked as an extension man for the railroad for several years before come to us, livestock agent. And he had a contact and made him chairman of this thing. And he operated that thing at a very minimum cost. He told me, he said, "Now I'm not going to levy any more cost than what we have in carrying on this thing, because anything that's left over in the year, it goes in the state treasury." And we're not raising money just for state treasury. And he operated that thing for several years at
Now, this was an organization of the people who produce milk for sale.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't like to give a figure. It's not right. But I think it was 0.5 cents a pound.
Yeah.
It's a very low figure. And was much lower than any organization around. And at that time, we had a temporary organization and a man in it, and he wanted the thing converted into a federal milk organization, and there was a lot of several of those in at that time. But I investigated those, and they were all costing a whole lot more than what we were going to do, and what Fitzpatrick said he'd run that thing for.
Was that was Lytle, wasn't it?
Yeah, Lytle.